Good morning, and welcome to the Thursday, February 24th, 2022 meeting of the House Education Finance Committee. I'm Chair Representative Jim Daffney. Remote hearings such as this are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members, you have the contents of your virtual packets available to you, and for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached to the calendar event that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, would you please call the roll?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Dabney. Roll call will commence now. Chair Dabney?
Present.
Representative Sandstead?
Okay, present.
Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels is excused. Representative Bamuth?
Present.
Representative Drevkowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan, present.
Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Richardson?
Richardson, present.
Representative Thompson? Representative Thompson? Representative Wagamot?
Wagamot, present.
Representative Shung?
Present.
Representative Joaquin?
Present.
We have 15 members present and there's quorum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Representative Jordan, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Wednesday, February 23rd meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval of those minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion to the Jordan motion? Seeing none, members, this is a voice vote. If you would please unmute. All those in favor of the Jordan motion moving approval of the February 23rd committee meeting minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Jordan. Thank you, members. Members, for our final meeting this week, we'll be hearing from an organization that received funding last session, and then we'll be hearing two bills we'll be laying over. First, however, before we go to the organization Live More, Screen Less, we'll briefly hear from student members of the Future Farmers of America. It's FFA Day, always a good day in the Education Finance Committee. I'm sorry that we're not meeting in person and able to see young people in those blue corduroy coats walking the halls of the state office building. But we do have two representatives from the leadership of the state organization. Let me start with Bailey Peterson, who's the Minnesota FFA State Sentinel from the Gibbons Fairfax Winthrop FFA chapter. Ms. Peterson, the pattern here is you introduce yourself by name for the record so that we have that, and then you proceed with your testimony. So welcome, please.
Thank you. Chair Dabney, members of the committee, my name is Bailey Peterson. I am the Minnesota State Sentinel, as your chair has said, and I'm a freshman at the university studying agricultural communication and marketing. Thank you very much for letting me bring greetings to you to celebrate FFA Week this week. In Minnesota, we have about 13,000 FFA members from across the state, both right in here in St. Paul and one of our newest programs in Minneapolis, all the way to the farthest corners of Minnesota. So a few things that our members have been doing this spring and this week is participating in career development events, participating in social media that we put out during FFA week, of course, learning through classroom instruction, and also celebrating FFA, especially this week as it's National FFA Week. FFA makes a positive difference in these kids' lives as well as my life and building leaders in our communities. You hear from FFA members about winning awards and building skills, but none of this happens without the agricultural, food, and natural resource sciences courses that are taught by about 315 agricultural teachers in the state to nearly 35,000 students. AFNR is part of the Career and Technical Education, which provides a chance to explore careers and opens up opportunities for me to grow and to become a leader, as well as any members in FFA. With permission from Chair Dabney, I would now like to pass it over to my teammate, Kyle Thomas.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson. Mr. Thomas is the state treasurer of FFA and is a member of the Rockford chapter. Mr. Thomas, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Good morning, everybody. My name is Kyle Thomas, and I am currently serving as the Minnesota FFA state treasurer. I am originally from the Rockford FFA chapter, but I'm currently a student at the University of Minnesota studying applied economics and international agriculture. And as we said, this is National FFA Week. So FFA members from all across our state and all across our country are celebrating everything about our organization, both past, present, and future. And today I would love to highlight all the great things that have been happening in our AFNR programs as a part of our career and technical education curriculum. As Bailey said, CTE provides a chance for people to explore careers and opens up opportunities for them to grow and learn as a person. Growing up in Western Hennepin County, CTE was not necessarily a focus of the schools around my area, but we have seen the change in the ways that our schools have been providing CTE programs, and they have been able to expand to lots of different schools in my area to allow students to explore the different opportunities that CTE can provide for its members. When I was growing up, I didn't necessarily see myself in a role in career and technical ed or in agricultural education because those were not programs that were offered to me. But when I had the opportunity to take my first ag class in seventh grade, I saw how FFA and agricultural education and CTE as a whole can transform my life. And now I can see how it can transform the lives of other people. All CTEs are electives in Minnesota, so we need flexibility for student choice. We also appreciate your legislators' investments into CTE and career and technical student organizations such as FFA. There are many career and technical student organizations across Minnesota, but we are proud to be the largest CTSO in the state. This investment helps alleviate the burden of cost for students to participate. I would like to thank you all for your time today, and I would love to open questions for the committee, either for myself or for my teammate, Bailey.
Thank you for that, Mr. Thomas, and thank you both for joining us here today. February is Career Technical Education Month. As you've said, this is National FFA Week, but we appreciate your presence here to allow us to mark both FFA Week, but also Career Technical Education Month here in the House Finance Committee. So thank you both for your time today. Appreciate your being here. Good luck with your studies at the university.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, members will hear from the organization Live More, Screen Less, that received a one-time grant appropriation in the amount of $1 million for a student digital well-being program. Ms. Hampton, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. I see we've set aside 15 minutes for the presentation, and then we'll have time for some questions afterwards. Ms. Hampton.
Good morning. My name is Marie Hampton. I'm the co-executive director of Live More, Screen Less. Thank you, Chair Dabney and committee members, for the invitation to share our digital well-being efforts with you. We're just honored to be with you this morning. It was great to hear from the FFA student leaders, too, so thank you for that. In advance of this meeting, we provided documents for you, a description of our equity focus by project, best practices, theory of change, and supplemental documents. Thank you for asking us to share our equity focus. For our brief time this morning, we will share stories about our work with Minnesota school communities and with young people. And it's our hope that by sharing these stories, you will understand how equity is woven into the fabric of our four projects. But first, I would like to share a personal story. As we know, equity starts with us. Over 25 years ago, I left the East Coast, where I had started my health education career, to take a teaching position at a tribal college in northeastern Arizona called Navajo Community College. As a health educator, I had specific ideas on what I would do to promote the health of the Navajo students. I had done my research. I knew the stats on the rates of disease among young people, and I was eager to apply my knowledge and skills. Then I met the Dean of Students. Paul Willetto is a kind, soft-spoken Navajo professor. After a light handshake over his desk, a hand was always extended in a greeting, but with a soft touch, not the firm handshake I was used to, I sat down to present the health education work I could do on campus. But before I could utter a word, this is what Dean Willetto said to me. Don't think that you are coming here to shed light on a problem or an issue that you think needs to be fixed. For generations, white people have come to our nation and they've told us about our problems and how we can fix them. We're not interested in your preconceived notions of what we need to do and what you can do, but we're open to sharing our language, our culture, our ways of thinking, and our philosophy of learning, if you're interested. After you've been at the college for a while and you have participated in our way of life and learning, we can have a conversation about what health education could look like. And a year later, that conversation took place. Students in my health class conducted a needs assessment, created a Greet the Dawn walking and jogging program for people of all ages. The program looked quite different from what I had initially thought. It was based on Diné teachings and stories and exuded health and well-being steeped in Diné culture, as it should be. And Diné is the name that Navajos call themselves. At the Tribal College, I learned an incredible life lesson that has informed how I move through the world. I learned how to listen. 4 years of teaching and listening at the Tribal College has forever shaped my personal and professional life. I tell you the story because listening is at the core of Live More, Screen Less. Listening is an organizational value and also a lens through which we approach equity. We're listening to teachers, to young people, to parents and caregivers, and to our local and national partners. While I have the mic, I want to share with you how we are embedding equity into the network of organizations and parent communication campaigns. It's one of the four projects. In this project, we're tapping our network of organizations that we built and continue to grow. We're surveying our network this quarter for interest in collaboration on that digital well-being parent communication campaign. And our first step in planning and preparing a culturally responsive parent campaign begins with professional development workshops with family liaisons at Faribault Public Schools, co-creating the parent questions with the family liaisons and Principal Jessica Lewis, and facilitating 4 affinity group listening sessions to better understand Somali and Latinx parent digital well-being concerns and interests. And the impact of these sessions will be to guide, strengthen, and inform the resource hub, the parent messaging, and our Train the Trainer series. Chair Dabney and committee members, thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Ms. Hampton. Next on the list is Liv Volkman-Johnson, who's your communications and office manager. Ms. Volkman-Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Dabney, members of the committee, my name is Liv Volkman-Johnson. I am the communications and office manager at Live More Screen Less, and I'd also like to share a story with you. Early in the morning of May 26th, 2020, I was getting ready to leave for the pie shop where I worked as a baker. My partner, scrolling through Twitter, solemnly called out to me, "Liv, they did it again." I knew what he meant without even looking at his screen. Still, I sat next to him and watched the cell phone footage taken by 17-year-old Roosevelt High School student Darnella Frazier of the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police officers on the corner of 38th Street and Chicago Avenue. After just 30 seconds, I couldn't watch anymore. I felt sick, but I was going to be late for work. So I drank a glass of water, shoved down the hurt and fear rising in my throat, and went off to work on the corner of 36th Street and Chicago Avenue. We closed the shop early that day. The rise of social media and cell phone use has broadcasted traumatic events like these on the public stage for everyone to see, including young people. How did this event and its widespread coverage affect the young people living in Minneapolis? What other life-changing events have similarly affected young people in our country? These are questions I hadn't even considered until last Wednesday, when I had the privilege of observing a conversation between the Wall Street Journal's family and tech columnist, Julie Jargon, and 2 advisors on the Live More, Screen Less Youth Council, college student Cece, who you'll hear from later, and Miles. Miles, an African-American student and member of the Youth Council since 2020, brought up the term trauma porn. Content that is often highly graphic, violent, or disturbing in nature posted on social media as a form of informative activism or entertainment to satisfy morbid curiosity. Miles highlighted the confusing dichotomy of staying informed while maintaining your own well-being. Quote, it's a hard balance between sharing information and showing people true events versus traumatizing people or exposing them to so much violence that they become numb and used to it. If Miles and Cece were not given the space to share these powerful, thoughtful responses, I would not have been able to recount them to you today. I am proud to be part of an organization that values the voices of young people from varying demographic backgrounds and lived experiences. Through affinity groups, surveys, and more, Live More Screenless is collecting valuable information on the primary issues related to screen misuse and abuse as identified by young people, their families, and educators. This information gathered directly supports our peer education programs, parent communication campaigns, and our resource hub or Learn More library. This library will provide access to relevant, culturally responsive resources on technology and social media use to young people, families, and educators. Live More values the power of listening. Miles shared some crucial concerns about how young African Americans have been heavily affected by the very public coverage of George Floyd's murder and the violent events that took place shortly after. Concerns I would not have considered had he not been given the opportunity to speak on them and had he not been shown that we were listening. I thank you for listening today.
Thank you, Ms. Volkman-Johnson. We have maybe about 7 minutes left, 6 minutes left, I believe, of the 15 that we'd allotted for this. So ask speakers to stay within that time limit. Ms. Hawley, Cece Hawley is a youth council advisor. Ms. Hawley, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Chair Dabney, and all the members of the committee to invite us here. My name is Cece Hawley, and I'm currently the youth council president and a youth advisor for Live More Screenless. And to give you some background on the peer-to-peer mentorship program, in middle school, we were all given iPads, and it was the best thing ever to us. With every notification, every screen light up, we loved being able to talk to each other through the entirety of the school day. Growing up with this technology like no other generation before, I never had any instruction or guide and or a mentor to help me navigate through this technology journey. Now that I'm with Live More Screenless, I realize that I can be that mentor that I always needed. In school, we would have technology contracts put together by a generation that didn't fully understand how we use technology in our generation. And then we would see it constantly be ignored by different circumstances. In addition, I believe that having youth mentors will allow other youth to listen and better be understood. In my senior year of high school, I was part of a peer leader program, which helped seventh and eighth graders. Because I'm part of the youth council, I was able to learn about different methods that we can use to help with digital well-being. One module we focused on was technology usage, and middle schools and middle schoolers were able to better listen to me telling them and discussing about technology usage. I can see personally in my sister, my younger sister, who's a Chinese American and a teenager, because of technology and social media affecting her, she dresses differently. She believes that there's a certain beauty standard and a certain way to act as a young Chinese woman. I believe our peer education program, being the first peer leadership digital well-being training created in partnership with students and for students, so that young people will be equipped and educated as mentors and leaders of digital well-being. Through listening to diverse and young voices of what they need rather than what we think they need, we are better able to attack the technological presence in our life. In addition to my work with the peer-to-peer program, I've collected several other stories of other youth-driven projects on digital well-being from different cities and even countries. The compilation of these projects will go into the resource hub that we are working on right now. The resource hub will provide information and resources for young people, educators, and adult advocates and parents. These pages will have curated websites, key research, and interviews with other young people and their work promoting digital well-being. Through accessing a diverse perspective of youth voice, we are able to focus on listening and honoring stories that have not been listened to. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Hobley. Next, Amy Webster, Digital Wellbeing and Youth Programs Manager. Ms. Webster, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Davney and members of the committee. My name is Amy Webster, and I'm a 42-year-old licensed school counselor, parent, wife, neighbor, friend, and newly hired digital well-being youth program manager at Live More Screenless. At Faribault High School, we are recruiting students to join our peer educators, which is a student digital well-being leadership group. To help ensure that all students can see themselves in this role, not just students who eagerly apply for all leadership positions, we reached out to the RISE program staff to meet with their students. RISE, Realizing Individual Student Excellence, is a drop-in support for students of color and first-generation students, which for Faribault, the composition is largely Somali and Latinx students. At the beginning of our workshop with RISE students, we defined digital media as social media and or gaming, and we asked students to share on two post-it notes, a benefit and a drawback of their social media use. It didn't take long for students to come up with a long list of benefits, including communication, talking with old friends, and talking with family that are far away. The drawbacks also didn't take long for them to come up with, which included many references to cyberbullying and stressful, takes up too much of my time, and getting exposed to horrible things. All of our young people have experiences with digital media. Where do they have spaces to come together, listen, share, build awareness of technology and digital media's design and its effects, to imagine and define for themselves what intentions and balance they seek? Peer education provides the space to do this. Through holding space for diverse students to create authentic community, to listen and meaningfully connect with their peers and adults, we seek to inspire young people to move towards digital well-being, beginning with themselves.
Thank you, Ms. Webster. Catherine Myers, co-founder and co-executive director, is the last speaker. If you could close it out with brief comments, Ms. Myers. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Catherine Myers. Thank you, Chair Davney and members of the committee. Prior to founding Live More Screen Less with Marie, I spent 25 years with high school students uncovering the power of story, both the vastness of literature and nonfiction and the ever-important personal narrative. It is with great passion for young people and the power of story that our organization is founded and grounded. I invite you to take a minute to think about how you would answer this question. How did you play as a child? This is a question we often begin asking during our training sessions. Answers are varied yet consistent. Fishing, biking, fort building, making up dance routines, lemonade stands, kick the can, games late into the night, tree climbing, and more. Were any of those true for you? On Monday, we led a training to over 100 elementary teachers, and what reverberated through the workshop was this. Students have lost the art of play. Absent from childhood for many is coloring, blocks, puzzles, imaginative play, and outdoor activities. Often, perhaps always, these have been replaced by screen-based activities. Consider this one measure of impact from our training. Out of 99 individual teachers, 92 said it was very likely or likely they would bring some aspect of digital well-being into their teaching practice. We cast a ripple across 92 classrooms, inspiring digital well-being for 1,800 children. As one teacher described, we can all make small changes to make big impact. We intentionally seek to listen and uplift stories of our BIPOC community. Recently, Abdi, a Somali parent liaison, shared how immigrant parents are often challenged to manage intricacies of the digital world and struggle to set limits on technology as their children very quickly are well-versed in the digital media world. Dora, a Latinx family liaison, stressed that the parents she worked with hold a high regard for what educators say. She encouraged teachers to guide parents to set healthy boundaries with technology. Just last week, we had 5 inquiries for our trainings and information from a district curriculum director, 2 mental health district leaders, 1 outstate county probation officer, and one teacher working on her doctorate on the impact of cell phones in the classroom as she is witnessing those effects firsthand. From curriculum to mental health to dramatic cybercrimes to classroom behavior, this is an issue demanding awareness and education. Simply, we all have a role to play in supporting young people in a digital age so they can thrive. And we thank you, committee, for passing the digital well-being bill so we can do just that.
Thank you, Ms. Myers. Members, we have a few minutes for questions. Representative Feist, I see your hand.
But okay, I can unmute myself. Cool. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say I find this all really interesting and meaningful. I've got a sixth grader, and he was talking about how kids in his class like bring phones into the classroom and how teachers have trouble getting them to put them away, which is just really alarming to me. And I was just wondering, like, how will you measure the impact? Like, how will it be quantified in the classroom? Like, how will we know objectively, like, how students are benefiting? Because it's all so important. And I just want to know, like, how will we know that it's working? So thank you.
Can I take that? Ms. Hampton, I see you're off mic.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'd love to take off that mute. One. Thank you, Representative Feist, for your important question. From the get-go, as a former program evaluator, we've been collecting data using surveys and assessments. In every engagement we do, we do evaluations. So that has been from day one. But due to the grant that we received, we were able to hire an external evaluator, and her name is Melanie Ferris, and she comes from 9 years at Wilder. And she has a particular emphasis in her training in public health and mental health. So we are working together with our external program evaluator. So while we are evaluating, we know it's important that we have someone do that externally. And so, yes, we will be able to measure impact on teachers, on students, parents, and provide that data to you all when it is available.
Thank you, Ms. Hampton. Representative Feist, any follow-up?
Just wanted to say thank you. I think that sounds really great, because I think like this is kind of a new realm that we're getting into, and trying to figure out how to quantify the impact and the benefit of your efforts, I think will be really, really helpful. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Seeing none, thank you to Live More Screen Less for coming today, providing us with the documents that are in members' packets and your testimony. Our first bill hearing for today will be House File 3393 from Representative Sandell. It's our intention to lay this bill over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill by no later than 11:30. Rep. Joachim, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3393 to be before the committee to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Yes, I make that motion to move the House file before the committee.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. With that, welcome to the committee, Representative Sandell. Please introduce your bill.
Representative Sandell, you're muted.
Chair Dabney and members and staff, thanks very much for your attention this morning and the invitation to talk about House File 3393. The topic of economic education is familiar to this committee, and the Minnesota Council for Economic Education is a familiar partner in our effort to strengthen one of the fundamentally important issues as we try to strengthen students' preparations for citizenship. No one questions the need for students to understand economics and personal finance. The problem is, however, that Minnesota teachers are often inadequately prepared to effectively instruct their students in these topics. Less than 2% of secondary school teachers are focused in their undergraduate preparation for teaching. Our elementary teachers, who must now help their students meet state standards in economic and personal finance, typically have even less preparation. Legislative grants in the past have supported MCEE. I taught school for many years, often teaching courses in economics, and though I had a background in the subject, I found the help of both the National Council and the Minnesota Council for Economic Education, great partners helping strengthen my work and benefit my students. One of my former students went on to work for the National Council. House File 3393 would continue to provide those resources. The bill requests an appropriation of $150,000 in fiscal year 2023 and an annual appropriation in the base of $300,000 beginning in 2024. It's the minimum level needed to enable MCE to continue delivering an exemplary professional development program offering workshops and courses from introduction to the topic to full courses for graduates. The workshops are offered in person in the Twin Cities, around the state through affiliated centers for economic education at colleges and universities. And during the last 2 years, the entire portfolio of training moved online. MCSS is a terrific operation. It's uniquely qualified to provide the service. There's no other organization routinely offering this kind of professional development for Minnesota teachers. The executive director, former representative, Dr. Julie Bunn, has been terrific providing academic and intellectual leadership, as well as the determined and demanding administration necessary to expand its reach. Mr. Chair, you know I'm willing to go on and talk about this for longer, but I'd rather you hear from Julie and the MCE trained teachers who are with us today. Thanks very much for this opportunity, and I'd like to encourage you to call on former Representative Bunn to talk a little bit more about this subject. Thank you.
Well, Representative Sandell, thank you for that. And we do sit next to each other on the House floor. So, Representative Bunn, former Representative Bunn, Dr. Bunn, good to see you again. Welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good to see you, Chair Dabney and members. My name is Julie Bunn. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Council on Economic Education. Took this position beginning in 2018. In a moment, you're going to hear, once again in some cases, from the heart and soul of our organization. Those are the teachers we serve and support to advance our mission. Now, however, I want to start with our heads and a few numbers to make the 3 points in support of our request. First, as you, many of you know, this is the fourth year MC has introduced a bill requesting base funding for our core teacher professional development program. Our initial request in 2019 was of $500,000. This represented half the budget for MCE to deliver a robust teacher professional development program statewide. We received at that time less than 1/4 of our request as a one-time appropriation. Last year, spreading across 2 bills and 2 finance divisions, we requested $400,000. We received one-time non-renewal grants of $150,000 for 2 years via the Commerce Line and none through K-12, even though you're the House and your committee were very helpful in advancing it in the House. The request in this bill is for the minimally, as Representative Sandell said, the minimally sufficient amount we need for ongoing support at the base level. The accomplished teachers you're about to hear from received their training from MCE when we were receiving double the financial support for professional development we currently receive, approximately $1 million a year. They were able to experience in-person, intensive, multi-day trainings at little or no cost to them. Without ongoing state funding, such offerings will not be possible going forward. Historic federal higher education private support for these activities, for the most part, are now gone. My second point, during the pandemic, MC has been extraordinarily successful in delivering training to teachers and competition staff capstone experience to Minnesota students statewide. In fiscal year 2020, MC doubled the number of teacher workshop registrations compared to each of the previous 2 years. Then in fiscal year 2021, we more than doubled those registrations again. Over 2,500 teachers registered for our online workshops last year. In each training year, these teachers instructed over 40,000 Minnesota students, and of course, many more they will instruct over the course of their careers. Over these same 2 years, MC directly served approximately 1,500 students a year through their capstone and competition programming. My final point today, MC has ambitious plans for the future that are necessary to improve the financial and economic literacy of Minnesotans. First, working collaboratively with others to ensure all Minnesota students receive sufficient personal finance literacy education. Second, revising and creating curriculum and lessons to include and reflect all of Minnesota's diverse student population. And finally, providing training and curricular resources aligned with the new state standards, social studies standards, when they are approved. But we cannot do this effectively without ongoing stable state support. A January 2022 survey of state councils showed that with few exceptions, the active and effective state councils received 25 to 50% of their funding from their states. Our small organization can certainly continue to report each year to MDE and to the legislature on our activities, accomplishments, and provide extensive metrics. But we do not have sufficient staff or resources to return annually to ask for funds. We look to you to continue this conversation this session, and we ask for your support. Thank you. We turn now to Joel Coleman.
Thank you, Dr. Bunn. Yes, next on the list, Joel Coleman, a social studies teacher at UBA Medical Academy, Hopkins, Minnesota located charter school. Mr. Coleman, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Chair Daphne and members of the committee. My name is Joel Coleman. As he said, I'm a social studies teacher at UBA Medical Academy, charter school located in Hopkins. And I've been here for 11 years and love every year of it. I'm excited to talk with you today about the impact of MCE has had on my students and my own teaching. You know, when I first started teaching in 2010, my main goal as a teacher was to help get first generation college students into college and be successful in college. And one issue that I saw when I first started teaching was that giving them co-enrollment courses, like courses offered through the University of Minnesota College and the schools, was a fantastic way to get them that access to a college degree. Thankfully, MCE stepped in and provided me with many, many trainings that allowed me to qualify to teach for college and the schools microeconomics, which I've been teaching now for about 6 years. I took 10-week long courses, several of them during the summers with MCEE, many trainings, and really the only way that you could qualify is to get a master's in economics. And that's not really something that can be feasibly done by a social studies teacher. So in reaching my first generation students, you know, I've been teaching CS microeconomics for many years now, and I've seen the impact that it's made on their future ability to graduate from college on time, successfully with minimal loans. Not only has it helped engage my students and get them that college degree that they deserve, but also it's really engaged my students and made myself a better teacher. To test their growth even, the MCEE runs the Economics Challenge, kind of like a quiz bowl competition that my students love participating in. And it tests basically everything they've learned from my class against students from around the entire state. And in doing so, we've competed for about 5 years now. And just last year, we won state and went on to nationals and were able to represent the great state of Minnesota and finished about middle of the pack. And we're very proud of that. What I think I'm even more proud about for that competition is that those students aren't just 4.0 students on that quiz bowl team. These are students who are maybe not have seen themselves as you know, ready for college. I know even my first team that I took to the challenge, I don't think the average was more than a 2.0 GPA, yet at the end of the challenge, they started seeing themselves as students who could go against other students in knowledge bowl and could do well. Three of them have graduated a four-year college since then. So I've really seen that nice impact that the council has had on those students and again on my career. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Next on the list is Brandi Siddiqui, K-12 Social Studies and Ethnic Studies District Program Facilitator and a former social studies teacher with the Minneapolis Public Schools. Ms. Siddiqui, first let me know, did I get your last name correct? Brandi, I'm pretty clear on.
Siddiqui, nice job. Bravo.
It's a good day. Thank you very much. Please, welcome to the committee. Please present your testimony.
Well, thank you to the committee for having us present here, and Chair Daphne and the members. We appreciate your time. So I was a former social studies teacher the last 9 years, and then this year I work for the District of Minneapolis Public Schools, so I'm the district, and I'm a district program facilitator for social studies and ethnic studies. Partly because of my work with MCEE, but also just knowing how high school teachers feel. I've spent a lot of time trying to help some of our teachers like learn how to gamify economics, which is something I took away from my time 7 years ago when I trained with MCEE. By the time I had taken my first week-long course with MCEE, I had already been teaching econ for about 3 or 4 years. And it was all right, being honest, but like most social studies teachers, it wasn't really my thing. And I was kind of confused about some topics, so we did the best we could. When I went through MCEE, they really taught us how to gamify it, how to add simulations to it. And that really helped change the way I taught econ and made it much more fun. And so this year, as the district person, I went around and gave to 25 econ teachers different simulation kits that largely came out of my time with MCEE and the simulations that we did. And just teachers like almost crying, literally, because of the pressure of the pandemic, but also just this need that was being met that like, I don't know how to teach econ. How do I make it more fun? And it was funny because I was telling someone how this one game is kind of difficult for kids to really understand it, but we keep explaining and keep explaining it. Then I said, but they have a lot of fun when they play. And it was funny because a teacher just said to me, well, that's part of that social emotional learning that we just need in our classes. And I was like, you're right. And I hadn't thought of it that way. And it really stuck with me. But like some of the things that like MCE teaches teachers to do aren't necessarily always content-based, but are also, I mean, are content-based, but also add an emotional element. And so the focus isn't always just, do you understand this perfectly well? But like, are you having fun? And does economics become a fun topic for you to be interested in and a fun class for you to be a part of? And I think that's really important for students in social studies to feel that way, to feel seen. And how do we add humanity element to economics? How do we make it about people and not just dollars and cents? And if we look at like the pandemic and what's happened with that, and we talk about price gouging, and we can kind of see how it plays out in reality. And I think that's really important for students. So MCE has done a phenomenal job in like helping change my teaching profession, and then also helping me extend this further to other teachers and trying to get them also to be a part of other educational opportunities offered by MCE. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Siddiqui. Last testifier, since it's apparently Social Studies Teachers Day here, the Education Finance Committee, is Race Hardy, a social studies teacher at Austin High School in the Austin Public Schools. Mr. Hardy, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. After you unmute yourself.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and committee members. My name is Race Hardy, Austin, Minnesota. Like, really appreciate this opportunity. I come to you today, I'm a taxpayer, I'm a Minnesota taxpayer, and I care about how my money is spent and how my fellow taxpayers' money is spent. I'm a dad. Both my daughters went through Minnesota schools. I'm a high school social studies teacher who teaches economics, and I'm a community college instructor who teaches economics. And I tell you those things because I care about economics. And there is no, I want to make this point really clear that there is no other organization, not just in this state, but in this country, that is more focused on helping people teach economics than the National Council and the Minnesota Council. And of those councils throughout the other states, there is no council more geared towards its teachers in its state than the Minnesota Council. I have 30 years of experience with the council. My first was, I was about an inch and a half above drowning while I was student teaching. And I got directed to the Minnesota Council office at Mankato, what was then Mankato State, and it saved me. I was student teaching in history, and I was told that I had to bring economics to the history lessons. And I had no idea what to do. The Minnesota Council showed me what to do. And it's been since that time, so that was, it was, in fact, it was 32 years ago this month that I started that student teaching that class at Owatonna High School. And it's the Minnesota Council that was what saved me. And what they do If you're not aware of it, is what the Minnesota Council does is it aligns every one of its assignments with what the state of Minnesota requires in its standards. And then it provides opportunities for not just content, but as Brandy said, it's also the means and the ways of instructing or delivering that content to students. But then it also wraps things up. It provides assessment tools for teachers. So you get the curriculum, you get the instructional method, and you get the assessment, and it all aligns with what the state of Minnesota requires. But it's also flexible enough for each individual district, as districts have their own ability to, what grade has those standards and things like that. And I presented a student's statement, Siri Ansorge. I really, really hope that every one of the committee members takes the time to read. It's just a couple paragraphs that Siri wrote. She graduated last year from Austin High School, and she, tremendous human being. So it was easy to ask her, and she responded immediately. But if you just read her words about the work that the council has done through her indirectly, she's also a Rockonomics award winner. And if you don't know about Rockonomics, just check out the MCEE website. It's one of the competitions students get to do, and Siri and her friends won that. And you talk about having fun, all you got to do is watch that YouTube video if you want to see a student doing intellectual work and having fun while doing it. So the name of the video is Unemployment Funk. It's Siri Ansorge. And people, the MCEE is the one place where a teacher can get help with every aspect of teaching economics, but not just economics, mathematics, using economic principles, reading, using economic principles, writing, using economic principles. It doesn't matter what you're going to teach, you can find an economic concept in there, and the MCEE is the place where this is presented for teachers, and teachers are given the opportunity to get better at using them. So I really thank you for the opportunity. I hope I didn't exceed my time here, but sure would take any questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Mr. Hardy. Members, when this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of this bill hearing. We received no requests from the public to testify. So, member questions. Representative Bennett, you've been patient. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure who to direct this question to, so I'll just throw it out there and let somebody take it on. So I'm curious the nuts and bolts of how this grant funding actually works. It sounds like the grant itself, these dollars go to the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. And so do they provide free training to teachers? Do teachers have to apply for grants to this organization? And then how are the teachers chosen, if they do have to apply? Or is it just simply free? This provides the staff so that free training is allowed for all. I'm not exactly sure what details to ask, but you get my drift here.
Dr. Bunn, how do you do what you do?
Yes, thank you so much for that question. So the primary way we do what we do is we provide the training to teachers. All teachers, we actually market what we do to over 30,000 Minnesota teachers. Every teacher who will be required under the state standards to deliver economics or personalized education, that's all elementary, all middle school, and all business, economics, social studies, and ag ed teachers at the high school level. They all receive information about our workshop offerings. During the school year, during the pandemic, we offered 2 weekly webinars on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, sometimes on Thursdays, that teachers could sign up for free of charge, so it'd be easy and available to them. During weekends, summers, we offer more intensive, longer 3-hour to 5-day, 40-hour events and workshops for them. Historically, some years ago, there were some charges associated with them, but today, pretty much, given what teachers are facing and what the market is, pretty much we provide all of these free of charge to Minnesota teachers. And state funding is what will allow us to do that. So yes, the state funds go towards supporting our core staff, of only 4 or 5, plus a network of master teachers who are teachers in the classroom still but are helpless with our instruction, and a network of affiliated PhD faculty members around the state who participate in that instruction. We also curate from all over the country the very best resources, and we also maintain our own set of curricular resources as well. So yes, that's the core way we deliver on this mission.
Representative Bennett, follow up?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. I do have another unrelated or different question, but first I want to thank you for that answer, and it sounds like a great program. I do believe that this kind of training is very important, and happy to hear that it's provided free of charge to teachers, and it sounds like we need to get the word out there more so teachers know they can access this. So, Mr. Chair, my second question is, and I'm not sure who wants to answer this, but do our current teacher prep programs cover this subject? They should be. If they're not, I would think. And maybe I could hear from that, because if they're not, they should be, and this should be in the plan. So does anybody have any answers for how our current teacher prep? I see a raised hand already. Thank you.
Dr. Bunn?
I'm going to answer initially, and perhaps Race wants to add to this. I think I saw him indicate he might too. MC, one of the things we do is we service the pre-service programs around the state as well. So most faculty of the 27 pre-service college and university programs that train teachers in social studies and business areas do not have faculty members, particularly in the social studies area, that know anything about economics and personal finance. So we make available to them our staff, our master teachers, and they contact us and let us know, we'd like you to provide 4 hours of content for our methods class this semester, or 8 hours of content for our methods classes focused on delivery of economics education at elementary or high school, whatever their class is that they're trying to do. So every year we are currently training 300 to 400 pre-service teachers. The number of pre-service teachers that graduate each year that may be asked to teach this material is about 1,600 here in Minnesota. So you're right, it should be taught at the college level in their training programs. Most of the programs do not have the staff knowledgeable in this area to do that, and we're working on a number of fronts, including the one I just mentioned to you, to address that situation.
Mr. Hardy, did you want to speak to this as well?
Yes, please. Thanks, Chair Dabney and committee members. So in the social studies, I had the privilege of working at the University of Minnesota's post-baccalaureate program for 3 years, and then also at McAllister College's teacher education. And so in the social studies, you're in there as a group, a cohort, and there are people who their major is history, political science, psychology, sociology, geography, anthropology, economics. So there's this wide range. And so in order for them to focus on just economics, there's just simply enough time. And as Dr. Bunn said, there's not the, nor is there the expertise or the staff. You might luck out. As the University of Minnesota, we happened to have, at the time I was there, Dr. Hartunian, who had been a member of the council, who was on the board of the council, and was an economist. So we happen to have in our program, you know, that expertise, but in general, that's not the case. And so that's why the council fills that void. And it's a void that's been there for decades. And the council has been doing its best with just a skeleton crew to fill this void that's in 27, you know, institutions across the state.
Thank you, Mr. Hardy. And Ms. Siddiqui?
So, for example, I took an online econ class when I was in undergraduate school. That's it. That was my whole econ background. That's all I ever had. And then I was a social studies teacher. And the first class I taught was econ, because nobody likes to teach it, because it's kind of like the class that nobody really knows much about. And so I would agree with Mr. Hardy and say, like, this really fills a big void. There are about 100 high school teachers across Minneapolis Public Schools. 25 of them were teaching econ this year. About 10 of them had never taught it before this year. And so I'm trying to like help support them and be like, these are different ideas you can do, and trying to build resources so teachers can do it, because most social studies teachers are like, I can teach US history, I can teach world, and I can teach American government. Human geography is okay, but econ, no, not doing it. And so it kind of gets brushed aside to the newest faculty member oftentimes, or it also gets, unless you find somebody who's really interested and really like it. So trying to build that passion is a really big void that MCE helps fill. So.
Thank you, Ms. Siddiqui. Representative Bennett, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. First of all, thank you to the council for filling in this gap. That's amazing, and we appreciate that work. But I would also like to encourage those are listening from our teacher prep programs, that this is a gap that needs to be filled, and using the council's expertise would be wonderful. You know, whether they pull you in as an expert, teachers or whatever, to come into their classrooms, or you teach those college instructors, but it sounds like it's a gap that really needs to be filled by our teacher prep programs as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Youakim.
I just want to echo the fact that thank you for filling that void that's out there, and understanding that teachers need a continuing education as well as just what they get in teacher prep program. And this organization plays an important role. And frankly, I'm disappointed that it's only $150,000. We just heard an overview from an organization that got $1 million, and I still don't know what they do. So thank you so much for being evidence-based and very particular, and being able to provide our teachers with so much expertise from your background, and to help them teach our students a very valuable skill.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Representative Sandell, any closing comments?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure this morning to hear the comments of Mr. Hardy, Mr. Coleman, and Ms. Siddiqui. Any of us who have taught school, and there are plenty of faces on the screen this morning, teachers and the people who have been in schools, could recognize their experience and identify it. We're really lucky to have an organization like MCE and Dr. Bunn, who I have to say personally has been terrific in promoting this organization. I hope we can endorse this. I hope this bill can go from here to the finish line, and that MCE can continue to offering its services across the state. Thanks very much, Jim, and members for this opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. With that, Representative Youakim renews her motion to lay over House File 3393 for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Thank you. Dr. Bunn, good to see you. Testifiers, thank you for taking your time today and sharing with us. Our final bill hearing will be on House File 3290 from Representative Daniels. Representative Daniels is excused this morning. It's our intention to lay this bill over for further consideration by no later than 11:55. Representative Kresha, thank you for stepping in. Would you like to make a motion to move House File 3290 to be before the committee to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
I would like to make that motion and introduce the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Kresha. Please introduce the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this is a bill that allows the Minnesota State Academies to keep the rental income from rent for land and living residents for use by the academies. And I believe we have a couple of testifiers from the academies who know far more about this issue and will do a much better job than I.
Thank you, Representative Kresha. Members may recognize this bill from last year as well, because this is not a new issue to the committee, but it's a good one to review. Dr. Wildling, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Are there any accommodations that we need to provide you to operate in this format?
No, I have an interpreter on my end. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Oh, thank you very much. Please proceed.
Good morning, everyone. This is Terry Wilding. I'm here to explain a little bit about a change that we are requesting. We proposed this change last session, and Representative Daniels is in support of us in trying once again this year. Basically, this is a small change in 125A.71. The change to the language would be traditionally our income with rental from our conference rooms, from our auditorium, from our gym. That money is put into staff development. and provides professional development, workshops, and trainings for our teachers to access. Right now, our student numbers have changed, and we have more and more kids with additional types of needs. Some kids with autism, some kids with additional physical and cognitive challenges, some of them with many different issues that we are facing today with equity and diversity. So there are issues that we want to make sure that we meet. At this point, the hot issue that we are studying is social-emotional learning. That social-emotional support, our teachers need ongoing professional development to make sure that we are providing the highest quality possible instruction for our students on both campuses. Within that discussion, we are looking at possible ways to increase the money to our professional development for our teachers so they can continue their education. If we remove the line related to land and resident, we have some additional property. We also have dorm rooms and apartments on our campus. And sometimes we have visitors, special speakers, workshops, conferences on our campus. We would like to use that money to be available for our teachers for professional development, so they can continue their education in those specific areas that apply to our students. We do know that if you take a look at the financial note, it's like $8,000 last year. There isn't a lot of money there, but for our teachers, that small number, $8,000, will really go quite far. We can provide many more opportunities on a long list of wants that our teachers would like to be more educated in. We would like to increase our support for our teachers. Any questions at this time?
Members, any questions for Dr. Wildley? It would appear, sir, you nailed it.
Oh. Mr. Chair?
Representative Joachim, I'm sorry, I didn't see your hand up. Please proceed.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank Dr. Wilding for trying to put more money into professional development, especially your focus on SEL. I really appreciate it. And this seems like a no-nonsense bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any other questions from members or comments? Representative Kreisha, any closing comments on your part?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a thank you to Dr. Wilding. Always appreciate your work and your testimony. And also thank you to Representative Daniels, who's been just a great supporter of these programs, and very happy to help him out by carrying his bill today. So members, I hope you can support the bill and the work being done by Dr. Wilding and his staff.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. And members, when the hearing was posted, we included instructions to the public on how to participate and testify if they so chose, and no one reached out to testify on this bill. With that, Representative Kreisha renews his motion to lay over House File 3290 for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Members, we'll look forward to a full week next week. Stay warm, enjoy the weekend. We are adjourned. Thank you all.